everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Chet Minotti.
And this week on our show, we have our wonderful friends at Vogue Runway talking about all the trends they saw on the runway, this past fashion month. And honestly, I've never heard the whole runway crew chat in this way before and really breaking down and distilling the hundreds of shows that they looked at over a month. And I was delighted by it. But first, Choma, I feel like everyone is talking about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. We had the big Buenos Aires kiss this weekend, which I feel like just delighted everyone across the internet. And he was wearing a very notable outfit, as always. I mean, he's really the fashion-forward one in this couple, I think we can kindly say.
Yeah, I think we can say that, right? You know, his style is very much like playful, joyful. He likes a cheeky print. I'm one of those annoying people who didn't know who he was before. I only know him as Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
I think most of our listeners agree with you. So I was very excited because we actually were able to talk to Danielle Salcedo. She is head of strategy at A&A Management, and she works closely with Travis on his outfits. Do not call her a stylist. She is a consultant on his image, and she seems to just be sort of a fairy godmother helping him get his looks together.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Danielle. How are you?
Good. It's great to meet you both.
You too.
You too.
So currently in Kansas City in a hotel, yes, because we're shooting a campaign this week for Travis Kelce's latest collaboration with the Chiefs for his brand True Colors. It's a clothing line. And so yesterday we were shooting in the stadium. So yeah, that's what brings me out here this time.
True Colors, just for people who don't know, is spelled with a K. Can you tell us anything more about True Colors?
Yeah, so Travis started the brand, I think, in 2019. It's his initials, True Colors. And, you know, he has a love for fashion and design and art forms of all kinds. And so he created the brand. The idea was to be kind of motivated by the idea of being free with how you express yourself, using color, you know, being bold and not really caring what everyone else thinks about your look at that time too.
I think he has such a joyful use of color. Is that something that you've always noticed about him since you've been working with him? That it seems like it's part of who he is. There's so many athletes, they tend to wear all black, but he is always in something really colorful.
No, he definitely loves color. He definitely makes it a priority to integrate that into his wardrobe. And one of the big things to know is that he does, like, for his game day moments, he styles himself in general. He styles himself. All I do is help set up the play with certain brands that I know he loves. And we focus a lot on, like, when you're looking at those red carpet moments, how can we do something that's different and stand out? Granted, he also loves his classic Tom Ford suits as well, but he loves to bring the color and the unexpected and the playfulness and across everything that he does.
Sounds like you guys have a very sort of symbiotic relationship, that it's working together a lot. But how did that evolve and come together?
I guess on brand, we met at Paris Fashion Week in 2019 and we connected and we stayed in touch and then started working with them shortly after. It was a collective synergies, I guess, that brought us all together.
Beyond the sort of bigger brands, I know that he's obviously worn Dior and he's worn Tom Ford, but he seems to really know a lot of the younger emerging American brands, like his champion brands, like Kalina Strada. I mean, how does he find these designers?
the thing to know about him is he genuinely loves fashion, right? Mm-hmm. So he's spending a lot of his own time on the Essence sites, or, you know, on the some of the hype sites or whatever, Farfetch. And he's literally on there looking at what is the newest brand. And then also what's available in his size. That is probably the hardest aspect to the equation, is finding clothes that are in his size too. So when he sees something that he loves, he's like, you know, even if he hasn't necessarily heard of the brand before, he'll be like, that comes in my size. I love that look. Bye.
So the Kalina Strada pants that he wore, he bought them. They weren't custom, because he's 6'5". These are not custom pieces.
No, not in that instance, no. But now we are starting to work a little more closely with brands to have some custom pieces. There's a new suit from an emerging designer that, well, you'll probably see soon. And it came, just to give you the idea of how that kind of came together, they sent me the lookbook over from this brand. And so I sent it over to him, and he's like, well, I love that suit, but I don't want it with shorts. I want it with pants. I was like, well, they'll make it for you. He's like, they will. And he was like, that's amazing. You know, and it's actually a golden suit.
Wow.
And I think a lot of the big brands too are now recognizing the power of athletes and fashion. And they're starting to design in particular for the athletes that aren't your off the rack size and your sample size. The other fun one is dress shoes for him.
Yeah. What size shoe is he?
14 in sneakers, 15 in dress shoe. And so you can imagine we're a little more limited in that space for sure.
So who are his go-to brands for shoes? Like, how does he navigate that?
We've found recently the Christian Louboutin dress shoe actually fits him nicely and comfortably. He's a big fan of the Saint Laurent boots. Those also fit him, although we'd love if Saint Laurent made clothing more in his size. Just putting that out there, but the shoes do fit him.
I mean, of course, we have to talk about that Kid Super look that he wore. Kid Super was actually, he's known for his kind of painterly prints and really playful prints. And so he made this suit that has the silhouette. I mean, I guess it's like an impressionistic, like, naked woman. I think it looks like clouds, but when you look up close, it's like more kind of...
There's a word for that. It's called a pareidolia, where you see shapes and clouds. So Choma, there you go.
Oh, really?
I love learning that word too. Travis and Colm, they've had a relationship for quite some time. You know, I think Travis was pretty early on in terms of when he started wearing Kid Super, long before the Louis partnership happened for him. And so I kind of think the identity of both of them is such a natural fit, right? It's so artistic. It's so playful. It's so colorful. Yet it's also cut in pieces that are fairly standard cuts, right? And they've had a lot of fun just playing together by Travis wearing some of those looks. And, you know, it was funny, I was speaking with someone at Ralph Lauren actually about a year or maybe a year and a half ago. And they're like, we actually didn't know who Travis was till we saw him come out in that Kid Super suit jacket. Wow. Press conference. It was a colorful, super colorful jacket. And that jacket was what caught Ralph Lauren's attention about Travis.
Wow. Just for those who don't know, so Colm is Colm Delane, and he's the designer of Kid Super. And he also did a capsule he guest designed a Louis Vuitton collection, men's collection.
Danielle, would you say that Travis's style has changed at all in the couple of months he's been with Taylor? Has her style changed at all?
Travis, I think one of the things about him is he's always authentically himself. You know, he's super confident and comfortable in his own skin that I don't think... you know, this is necessarily influencing how he dresses. He's always dressed colorful and fun and expressive. And so I haven't noticed a difference necessarily.
This past Sunday in Buenos Aires, Travis wore that amazing J. Logan Home shirt. Can you tell us a little bit about what that brand is and how you guys found it? And also that they now have a 65% traffic increase, apparently.
Wow.
You know, it's funny. I can't claim I found it. That's Travis all on his own, really. It's funny. There's a lot of accounts now on social media that there's one that's dedicated strictly to his style. and they recently started following me. And I've actually found it so helpful because they identify, because there's times I don't know exactly what he's wearing. Because again, he does. He literally, those looks that you see him in, he picks them out himself. I'm only amplifying from those really big moments with him and the brand alliances. However, I will say this morning I woke up to an email from Jay Logan asking to collaborate because they saw him in that look. So that's so fun.
I hear that. From my understanding, Jay Logan, the shirts are all made of vintage scarves, which must make them unique and not readily available. So that's interesting that he found them.
Yeah, I think he wore Jay Logan. There was another shirt that he wore of theirs earlier on in the season, the one with the pink Amiri pants.
I read somewhere that he's quite spontaneous with how he plans his tunnel looks, but what's he like to work with as far as a red carpet look? Do you have to have 5 options for him to pick on the night, or is it something that he's willing to commit to, you know, a couple of weeks in advance, like the Dior suit he wore on SNL?
That happened to be a moment. I'm based in Miami, and I was like, I went by the Design District store, walked into the store, snapped a photo. I said, "What do we think of this one?" I said, "Love it." So, and I just grabbed it, put it on the plane, carried it with me right up to New York, and it worked and it fit.
It didn't need any tailoring? What?
Light tailoring. And right. In that case, SNL's tailors were the one that did it for us.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times it's going through Vogue Runway, snapshotting the photos, and then he just gives me the heart on the ones he likes. And then when he's quiet, that's when I know he's not feeling it. and then I secure that look and, you know, we make it happen. I think we did that recently with the latest photo that I've seen running everywhere is the Lanvin suit he wore to the net.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I like that one. The pastel with the wide leg. He's very much down with the wide leg trend.
Super. That was definitely what he wanted. He wanted the oversized. He loved the monochromatic. And then the other thing from that note was his mother was his date. And so a few days before I got the call, can we style his mom? And I was like, oh, okay, this is a totally different arena for me. But we got this. And then we found, if you've seen the photo of them together, she's in a light, like silvery metallic set. And she had a few options because there are a couple events that week. And I was like, you know, your son will be in that aqua. So if you wear that light sequin, you guys will pair perfectly together. And I was so happy when I saw it. And now I see that photo everywhere. And I think of that moment.
And what does Travis's closet look like? Obviously, he does a lot of online shopping. I don't know whether you help him organize that or like, does he really have 300 pairs of sneakers? I've heard that that's the case.
He does have that many. And I think now his closet is definitely a priority to him. I think this is fine to say. He's moving into a new home, as everyone knows. And now it's about designing the new closets.
Ah, that's fun.
And one being dedicated strictly to shoes.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
Oh, I love that.
It's so fun.
I think with that, we're going to let you go, Danielle. And thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Happy Super Bowl season.
Super Bowl season.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
In more big news this week, Chloe, you wrote a big story for the December issue about Lauren Sanchez, no?
Oh my gosh, Choma, this has been quite the roller coaster.
You got in a helicopter with her?
Yeah, I loved it. Love being in a helicopter with her.
I'm so afraid of helicopters. I've only done it once.
I mean, helicopters are a little scary. I felt very safe in Lauren's hands. I mean, this was a real roller coaster ride because, first of all, it was highly secret. It was constantly referred to as the Texas story in Vogue meetings. And I went to Texas because that is where Jeff Bezos has a 400,000-acre ranch. And it is both where he has a home where he spends Thanksgiving and holidays with family and extended family, and also where he does his Blue Origin launches from. So there's the whole Blue Origin space facility is there. And I got to do a tour of it and sit in the test rocket capsule where all the astronauts train for how to go into space. And Lauren Sanchez, his fiance, who is who the profile was on, she actually is going to space early next year. So that was
Do you think their wedding's in space?
That did not come up. It seems just, like there would be some logistical challenges.
Wild theory.
The space facility is fascinating because you got to go see where the rocket launches from. The rocket is housed in this enormous barn. One of the photos taken is in front of the rocket. It's called the New Shepard. They say that when the rocket takes off, it's like a caged animal because it hisses and creaks. It just sounds like a insane experience to witness that launch.
Is this Astronaut Village or what?
So, no, that's the Blue Origin launch site. And then 5 minutes drive away, everything is sort of driven around in Rivians, which are the Amazon answer to Tesla, the electric vehicles.
And never seen one. Never heard of it.
You zip to place in a Rivian. And Astronaut Village is this cluster of 7 Airstream trailers that are kitted out.
Wow.
Beautifully with like Sephora linen, the Sephora towels, the pattern of it is supposed to mimic the battery design of the launch thing. Every Airstream trailer has a collection of vintage books about space. It's very thorough. All the food, the snacks there, it's like moon cheese and space balls. It's very thoughtfully done, and I described it in the article as sort of Oppenheimer meets Amangiri.
I love that.
It's
and
like,
then they were like, Oppenheimer and Barbie is their two.
I know.
How they describe each other. I thought, you got some funny stuff out of them.
I really liked Lauren. I had a really good time with her, and there is something to be said for someone just being authentically who they are, and I really appreciate that. I will say that it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Just this sweeping desert, these rocky red cliffs. I can't show you any pictures myself because as soon as I landed in El Paso, someone met me and taped up my phone cameras in a very intense way. Security is no joke, especially around the Blue Origin space stuff. There was actually a staff lawyer with me at all times to make sure nothing proprietary details were revealed. So,
wow. I mean, you also write about her involvement with all these charities, including the Earth Fund. And how do you think she personally reconciles her interest in these causes? Given the fact that, Amazon's own impact on the planet.
I asked her that. And I sort of said, you have the largest yacht in the world. You fly private. Mm-hmm. How does that equate? And she said, we're thinking big picture. And I think they think we're investing right now $10 billion into the environment. And I sort of think of it as like a giant carbon credit. When I fly, I'll buy carbon credits for my flight. And they cost like $40. I feel like their carbon footprint for an entire year is one of the largest, and so they're justify that with this enormous investment into the Bezos Earth Fund, which is their climate-focused charity. And she does really care about that and is very involved in it. But, of course, there are some glaring contradictions there.
Right.
I went on a helicopter ride with Lauren, and then we hiked to the bottom of this bizarre but fascinating and fabulous 10,000-year clock.
I still don't get what it is.
The idea is that this is something that will live beyond us and future generations, and that it will be like a land
we
arts.
We hope if we make it another 10,000
years. Well, exactly.
Years.
A land art site where it will move and continue keeping time on its own. And so future generations can visit this and see this clock keeping it's sort of powered from solar energy, but also has backups.
It looked massive.
Massive, exhausting. It was 500 feet into the ground. We had to hike down there. Annie Leibovitz did it.
Oh, my God.
And then Jeff, my friend Jeff, joined us during our interview. And Lauren said, honey, can you make us some margaritas? It's been a long day. And he went behind the bar, which is in this like space-themed bar at Astronaut Village. And the cocktail shakers are rocket-shaped themed that Lauren found on eBay. And he makes us these delicious margaritas. And as he's about to pour them, he's like, we have no salt. I need salt. And like out of nowhere, this like Tupperware container of salt appeared. And he was so delighted by it. I was like, a salt genie. And I loved this moment.
You literally went to planet Bezos.
I did go to Planet Bezos, Choma. That's exactly right.
And you made it back in one piece. I'm so happy.
Barely.
You made it back. The run through will be back in just a moment.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and a luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This is The Run Through. I'm Jose Criado Sunsueta, and today I'm joined by my Vogue Runway colleagues. Would you guys introduce yourself? Would you girls introduce yourselves?
I'm Nicole Phelps. Hi.
I'm Laird Burley Person.
I'm Laia Garcia Furtado.
And this is Vogue Runway.
hyphenate with a hyphen.
Lots of hyphens. Yes. Today we're going to talk about trends. We're going to talk about trend reports, which is something that we do at the end of every season. Laird creates the ready-to-wear trend report. Laia creates an accessories trend report. And I work in jewelry and menswear. And Nicole edits all. Nicole, would you mind telling us a little bit about what trend reports are and how we approach them at Vogue Runway?
It's a way to put hundreds of collections we see a season in some sort of thoughtful order, I would say. I think trends are a fairly old-fashioned concept. And since fashion has become increasingly more online and focused on social media, they've almost become a little irrelevant, I think, because they move too fast for people to actually act on them. They move at the speed of TikTok, and they sort of exist almost only in social media. And so I'm definitely less interested in those kinds of trends, the things that TikTok births, than I am, in the runway. But even more so, I would say I'm more interested on, living in New York, walking the streets every day and seeing what is really happening. That I find super fascinating.
I love that. Is there anything you've noticed recently that you're like, oh, this is really happening in New York?
Well, I predicted that the Miu Miu underpants from spring 2023 would create the summer of underwear in New York City. And I don't think I was wrong.
I don't think you were wrong either.
I saw a lot of girls wearing, it's like, are they hot pants? Or are they,
no,
you know,
like it's their underwear, right?
Their underwear. Like we were, remember when we were at a bar like a couple months ago? We went to Botanica, which is like a very like classic young people New York bar. And there were two girls wearing little underwear over tights.
Yes,
just
it's
like
true.
Out.
It was a very Gen Z moment. And Lion and I don't really go out. We also don't go out in the Lower East Side.
Yes,
but we somehow ended up there. But Laird, I remember when this happened on the runway, you created a little post about Edie Sedgwick, the OG. Would you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to look at things and not see other things sometimes. Mm-hmm. So for me, the first underwear wearing girl was Edie Sedgwick, an heiress who had a tragic life. I really recommend there's a oral history of her.
It's iconic.
It's an amazing book. She came to New York. She became part of Warhol's factory, and her fashion changed from very ladylike and proper to something much more Warholian and factory friendly, including tights. And Vogue published a picture of her in the 60s in her apartment at Chelsea Hotel, standing on a leather hippo doing ballet exercises in a little t-shirt and her tights, which she would put heels on and go out with big dangly earrings in the evening.
I love that. A true muse. This sort of like side comb was a good example of how we approach trends of a runway, right? We sort of look at something. Laird, who's our senior archive editor, she remembers something else, and then we begin a big conversation about how that applies on culture. I think if there's something I've learned writing for Nicole is that we should always look at fashion with a cultural lens, right? So that leads us into the trends we saw this season. And I think based on what you were saying, Nicole, the way we've been approaching trend reports is trying to contextualize all of the stuff we see on the runway in culture today. So I love for you, Laird, since you worked on the Ready to Wear trend report, which is sort of like the big one, to tell us how you looked at everything you saw on the runway and decided to distill it into this one story.
Essentially, my process is to go through every single picture, and if something makes me tick, something I notice, I just pull, and then you start amassing volumes of things. And so there might be a list of 40 trends, and then, well, okay, what's important? What tells a bigger story? As you mentioned, Jose, Nicole is always encouraging us to connect things when it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't force things. But I think, I mean, these are really difficult times. The world, everything feels in conflict. And so the two big trends I noticed was a lack of color, black and white. And in a bigger picture, this is oppositional, but you know, white is associated with new beginnings and black with death. And I think, you know, we're all longing for a fresh white page, but we cannot avoid that, you know, there's gravity in the world, there's sadness, and people are going through it, like even designers. So Jun Takahashi at Undercover is going through a period of mourning, and his collection beautifully was, you know, worked through that to get to a place of beauty. So shrouded looks, angel wings, a sort of x-ray look at who we are physically and metaphysically.
Interesting. And Laya, you pulled 145 must-have accessories.
I did.
What is your approach to doing that?
It's the same. Looking at all the pictures of every show multiple times is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the same thing as Laird. You know, you look at everything and you're like, well, this trend, you know, happened last season. Or sometimes you're like, well, this trend is like, you know, it's winter. Like, of course, there's boots.
Yeah.
So it's like, what kind of a boot? That kind of thing. I think something that actually contradicts a little bit what I've said is that flip-flops were a big trend for spring. And I think most people would be like, of course, like warm weather, you wear flip-flops. But flip-flops are not necessarily sort of like a usual thing that you see on the runway, like mm-hmm. very just plain flip-flop basic sandals. So that was sort of interesting because, you know, the girlies love to wear flip-flops.
Yeah.
I mean, Mary-Kate and Ashley love to wear flip-flops on their in their everyday life, like
yes.
Havaianas. And mm-hmm. I recently got a pair and I just wear them around the house because I don't actually have the guts to, like, I think if you wear them,
New York Street
or the gross yeah. out factor.
Yeah. yeah, like if you wear them in a place where you like get in a car and you drive, like that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But like, absolute, like I just cannot. And they do look really cool when I wear them around the house. I'm like, wow, look at my feet in these little flip flops. I look so chic. But
do you
anyway.
Think it's about exhaustion of Birkenstock? Like, is the Birkenstock moment over and that's why we're in flip-flops?
No, you know, I feel like there were actually, like, that was something that I could have pursued in the trend report, but not a Birkenstock per se, but more of, like, the ergonomic footbed
yes,
sandal.
The granola girl sandal.
Yeah, like, I could have gone in that direction, but I instead, for footwear, flat, category flat sandal, it was a flip-flop, and it was the gladiator sandal. That was the other thing, like, which I think is very, like, of the aughts when mm-hmm. you would actually wrap them all the way up to your, like, knee.
But it's also very TikTok. Not only men yes. are obsessed with the Roman Empire.
Yes, yes, exactly.
See, culture.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about all of this is that you just mentioned two things that are sort of, like, coming back, right? Not that flip-flops went away, but the people that you've mentioned, like, for example, the Olsons are it girls, yes, and style icons in theory, but, well, in practice as well. But also, like, these images are, yes, today, but they come from that era of, like, boho chic, right? Which is mm-hmm. something I particularly notice in jewelry, like a lot of festival beads, a lot of sort of, like, raw cut stones and crystals, etc. So I'm curious, when you see something come back like that, Laird, how do you approach it into a trend report? Do you like to just call it out as a comeback, or do you like to package it as something that feels new, or what's the approach?
I think what I've learned doing this over the years is trends change less quickly than we think that they do or mm-hmm. than we report them, because we're ready for something new. But if a new color is introduced, it will last for several seasons. So, for example, the metallics trend that I wrote about this season, I couldn't ignore it. It was a continuation from resort. I think probably any single season you could do a metallics trend, but it was so prevalent, I couldn't overlook it. So it was, how do I make this feel fresh and not, I was kind of bored. But then someone mentioned, oh, the Olympics. And okay, you know, it's not that designers were thinking necessarily about the Olympics, but I think trend reports, we all have a human need to organize material. Mm-hmm. We are dealing with thousands, I mean, tens of thousands of pictures, and anyone coming to the site is looking at hundreds of shows. So how do you organize it? How do you put it in a package that makes it look new or makes a connection that might not be the first thing that you come to mind? And just how do you organize it in a way that's fun and informative?
That's so interesting. I'm curious, Nicole, on your end, since you edit all these trend reports, how do you approach that, like, when you talk to us individually and we walk you through the things that we've identified, what's your process to approach editing us?
Obviously, I learn a lot when I talk to you all about the trend reports, because I don't really go to the shows and think about trends in the way that you do. And, you know, I've been in fashion for a very long time. And so you see the cycles repeat mm-hmm. and, you know, repeat again. And so I think you can be a little cynical about things, but then, you know, something comes along that surprises you and charms you.
Did anything surprise you in this season?
Well, one thing, you know, talking about underwear, there were a lot of shorts.
There yes. were a lot
and we
of
were,
shorts.
We were really scratching our heads about short shorts on the runway. Mm-hmm. We'll see if those two emerge as something that people are interested in
yes.
in real life.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty. On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier, and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper. Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money. Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
Something that I love about Nicole's reviews is when she talks about how things look on the runway versus how they would apply in real life. And I think the shorts is a very interesting thing where you're like, okay, like short shorts look fabulous on the runway, but like these girls, like they don't sit on the subway. Like, so I'm very curious. Laya, I think you wrote about the short shorts, right?
I did.
What's the take?
I mean, I think it was, you know, a continuation of the underwear mm-hmm. trend. I feel like we're just having, you know, I feel like there's every season designers pick like a body part. I think we're going through legs. Like, and we connect this to the hemline index, yes. right? So the hemline index is this theory where in times of economic prosperity, women's skirts, their hems get shorter. Mm-hmm. And when we're in an economic slump, the hems go long. And so maybe that has something to do with shorts, except, I mean, things aren't good. So. maybe the short shorts have
but
put
it
that
was, it
theory
was never
to that.
Proven.
Yeah, but, you know, I like to, I think those things are cutie and I like to believe in them. But maybe it's skirts and not shorts. Like, shorts are a different kind of hat.
So is there a shorts index?
Yeah, it's a shorts, like, maybe there is a shorts index. But that's also the thing about trends. It's like, not like one day you're in, the next day you're out. But I think, sort of going back to what Nicole said at the beginning, that there's so much happening right now, that it's like there is a personal sort of touch that goes into our trends, because it's we see, we pick, and Nicole final picks. And I think I feel like that's something maybe important to talk about, that there are some things where sometimes Nicole will be like, you know, well, do we need to
in the editor's eye.
Yeah, it's, do we need to give true. That our seal, yeah. a seal of approval?
Like,
kind
do
of
we
thing.
Need to get behind this?
Yeah, yes. Which I love.
Well, there's this amazing documentary called In the Editor's Eye, which is about Vogue editors that I love. And I used to rewatch all the time before working here. But I think what's interesting is that, which is like, just because something repeats on the runway doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to baptize it as a, like, christen it as a trend, right? And I think, Laird, I love your take on this because of the fact that you go through every single image and every single look that Vogue Runway covers to create, to call your trend report. How do you approach keeping something and being like, I want to include this in like the 11 trends that you wrote about this season, and something that you're like, maybe this doesn't need to be in it?
Well, I mean, there are certain things that you can't ignore. They're just a critical mass. And if they're not offensive, I mean, by offensive, I mean, you know, there are some things that are harder to get behind than others. But there are some things that are a critical mass. And so you're reporting on something that just is, you know, everyone's doing this. But then it's like, how do you weigh what's important? And for me, it's always what makes my heart beat faster. So my favorite trend was this super, super tactile manipulation of fabric that then brought me to the sculptures of John Chamberlain, which were made, they were upcycled from car parts. Beautiful things. Many designers have referenced and will reference him. But yeah, it was kind of in a, I think we're, there's a lot of celebration of the neo-expressionists in Paris. Rothko, and I was reading about Rauschenberg, and somehow I was feeling a connection between art and fashion. The white dresses, the filmy white dresses, made me think of Botticelli's Primavera. And so that was in my mind when I was pulling. There's this attenuated silhouette that made me think of Giacometti. It's not planned, but when I have that like little hook to hold on to, and then it just clarifies everything, then you can see and edit more clearly once you've come to your idea. I don't know. It's not a science.
It's an art.
Yes.
And you taught me a new word in your trend report, which is anemoia. I probably said it wrong.
What's
but it's
that?
It's the longing for things never known.
Ooh.
Which I think is a very Gen Z thing right now, particularly with the 90s.
Mm.
And I think, Nicole, very early in the season in New York, I don't remember where, I think we were in a car going somewhere, or we were just talking about collections, and you called out the mid-90s as like sort of a common thread in the collections this season.
I think that was probably because Peter Doe was arriving at Helmut Lang, and it was the first time that brand had been on the runway in a minute. And I you know, lived through that moment. And I feel Helmut Lang was sort of my baptism into high fashion. I was just getting my feet wet and learning about the sample sale phenomenon in New York. And, you know, you could get great pieces for less than $100, which is hard to do at a sample sale in 2023. So the mid-90s for me are sort of my moment. And so my Roman Empire, I probably see them in more things than they actually are. But I'm not alone in that. I mean, talk to anybody who was around in that moment. And we all sort of fetishize that minimal, you know, black tailoring that he was doing.
And then I'm getting a shout out on both Laird and I's trend reports. I also do a menswear at women's, or the men's looks at the women's wear collections. And there was a very mid-90s jacket that was a Helmut Lang jacket, mm-hmm. that sort of a jacket silhouette that really repeated along most collections, and that was a tailoring silhouette of the season. I'm curious with you, Laird, as an archivist, what is your take on this nostalgia and particularly this anemoia?
I actually learned the word from my esteemed editor when I was writing an anti-nostalgia piece, which you can still find on the site, and I still feel anti-nostalgia, which might seem incompatible with the idea of being an archivist. But I believe that we can only move forward. I mean, it really depends how you define nostalgia. But if you define it, as I think it was in the Greek, a return to something, that sounds a lot like MAGA to me. We can't go back. We must go forward. We must take things and move them forward. And I think nostalgia is a poison that is really running through fashion. We need to think about new things. We need to embrace technology. We need to move beyond a postmodern mix and really push. This is why someone like Duran Lantlake just explodes my mind. I'm so happy because it's an exploration of space, not outer space, but what the form can look like. It's not referential, but still, like, he's deconstructing a Helmut Lang jacket from 1999 to make this new thing. So that's my kind of guy, because it's taking from the past but moving it forward. Fashion is supposed to be about what's next. And please do not give me retrofuturism, because to me that is not future. That is repetition retro. Again. Yeah, so anti-nostalgia from this and also anti-fashion.
Controversial yet brave.
And we're done.
You know, one of the trends of the moment is this idea of redoing collections from the 90s. And I think you can only do it so many times before it feels, you know, like we must move on, I would say.
Yeah, do it as a re-release, but don't do it as your collection, I would say. And by anti-fashion, I was referring to the anti-fashion movement. which is a very 90s thing. Mm-hmm. It's essentially, to sum it up in a really simplistic way, it's come as you are. You know, wear what you look great in, what you feel most comfortable in. Be yourself in your clothes. And they could be anything. But, you know, I think one of the things that inspired an anti-fashion essay I did was in our legacy show, where everyone just looked cool. It was like, who is that person? Not, oh my God, what are you wearing? Mm-hmm. It wasn't about logos. It was about looking fresh.
What's our legacy, Laird?
It's a Swedish, it's a really cool Swedish independent brand that launched women's wear about 5 years ago and is styled by an incredible woman named Nico Walker, and it always just looks like how you would wear it and not styled, even though it is.
That's funny, exactly. Though, because I'm actually very, like, anti-re-releasing of clothes. I think one of the things I like the most about fashion is how they're, like, markers of a time. And so if you remake something now, I think you're sort of messing with the timeline. Mm-hmm. So I'm extremely anti. Like, when Marc Jacobs redid the Perry Ellis collection, a part of me was like, yes, I would love to have this dress or these pants, but I don't want the new version. I want the real one, because that one means something. And this one is made for Instagram. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm old too.
What would you say are markers of time based on the collections that we've just seen? Maybe in 10 years, maybe we'll look in hindsight and be like, oh, that was very 2023. Laia?
I keep thinking of the sort of weirdly not fashion thing, but I keep thinking of like a TikTok trend, actually. Mm-hmm. It's how to dress like a Lower East Side TikTok trend, which is, it's like early Y2K.
Yeah.
You wear a low-slung skirt that is just like a random low-slung skirt. You wear like a baby tee or a tank top.
Mm-hmm.
You wear cowboy boots. You wear a big messenger bag around your body. You wear big headphones. You wear a lot of jewelry. And it's very specific to me because it is so Y2K. But I think when I see the girlies now, one of the girls that works at GQ,
mm-hmm.
she is my favorite, like, Gen Z style. She doesn't, it's not that she dresses like this every day, but when I see the way that she like layers a skirt over pants or puts clothes together, it feels very specifically like that to me.
In a way, this both feels like a redux, but also a new thing.
Yeah.
Right? It also feels very insular to the Lower East Side, but it's also so viral on TikTok.
Because
so it's
on
a combination
TikTok.
Of both things. Yeah. That's very interesting, Nicole.
We can talk about all different kinds of shoes like all day long at Vogue, but what people are really wearing are sneakers. When I look around, people are really still driven by comfort, mm-hmm. I think, in a way. So I would say like an expensive pair of sneakers is also a really 2023 thing.
A Wales Bonner Adidas collaboration, yep. kind of vibe. Or athleisure, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
What about you, Laird?
Copycore.
Copycore? Tell us more about Copycore.
Everything we've been talking about, the Y2K, the ex-designer, mm-hmm. it's there. Can you name me something that looked really new? But I mean, what I would hope out of the trends that I wrote about
true.
Is the elongated silhouette. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really fascinating that at the same time that JW was pulling things up to under the bust, but not on pier exactly, other designers were dropping the waist or, mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't about the Y2K low waist. Like when you look at Duran, you know, the middle is filled, but this really stretching both ways of the body. I thought this attenuation is super interesting. I don't know if it will go anywhere except photographs, but that's something that excited me.
I agree, actually. So Jonathan Anderson for Loewe, for both his men's and women's collections, he hiked up the waist of his trousers all the way down to the bust, all the way up to the underneath
the crotch.
Bust, and he dropped the crotch, which I found very interesting. And what was also very interesting is that at the men's collections in Paris in June, both him and Rick Owens did that, and very differently, but like a day apart. And I think it was really the silhouette everyone was talking about. I think it was the one thing everyone was talking about in Paris other than Pharrell's LV debut, but that conversation was less about the clothes and more about the spectacle. The true silhouette was really just this hiked up trouser that felt new.
Well, I want to ask you a question. Do you think men will adopt that silhouette?
No. Well, I think now that he put it in Women's Wear, I found that a lot of the writers and a lot of the critics that I follow were a lot more interested and a lot more dazzled by the silhouette in the Women's Wear than in the Men's Wear for different reasons. But I think the problem with Men's Wear, given that I write so much about it, is that it is a very insular conversation. What happens on the runway and what happens with celebrities very rarely gets to the, like, very rarely trickles down, right? Even on TikTok, when you see the girls Laya talks about, right? Like all these girlies on TikTok dressing, they, you know, evoke like Prada shows. They try to like style themselves as they would see something in Saint Laurent. Like they really follow the runway. And if not, a lot of those trends do trickle down. It doesn't happen in menswear. The general majority of guys on TikTok, the way they're dressing, it's sort of like a vintage tee, gym shorts, a Patagonia jacket, and like, you know, maybe like a vintage trucker hat and a pair of sneakers, right? It's sort of like combinations of the same things. The ones that are more fashionable don't really still don't follow trends, or at least runway trends. And when you are, I live in Brooklyn, every morning when I'm coming from Crown Heights into the World Trade Center, all these guys look exactly the same. And they've looked the same for the last couple of years, right? And I think that is what's interesting to me about menswear is that a lot of these trends are a completely, like, inside baseball conversation. Like, they never really trickle down. And when they do, it's never exactly what you expect.
I feel it's, like, for men, it's about the width of a pant leg.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that actually changes. Because now I mm-hmm. think when you see somebody wearing the very, very skinny jeans that people were wearing in the early aughts, you're like, whoa, like that, it looks so out of place now. Yeah.
But what's still interesting about that is that, you know, my brother is a journalist. He lives in Buenos Aires. And he actually texted me about this a few weeks ago where he was like, what do I do with my skinny jeans? Because he loves a skinny jean. And he hates white pants.
You
he was
like
they make me look shorter. And I was like, well, girl, I'm the wrong person to ask. You know what I mean? Like, I love everything wide. And he's sort of like, you know, he's resistant, like he doesn't want this change. And the reality is that he's probably not going to change. And I think that is the thing about menswear, unlike womenswear, where there's resistance, there's no encouragement to adapt, right? Like, you know, these guys can still look the same that they did in 2007 and it's fine.
But isn't that freedom?
Yes, it's a freedom of choice. And I think that's sort of what's exciting because, again, not to like put my brother in, but he's getting married next year. And, you know, he was telling me, he's like, what should I wear? And I was like, what do you want to look like? And he was like, I want to look like myself. And I was like, well, girl, then don't ask me. I'm like, but it's interesting, right? Because he doesn't feel a pressure to dress a certain way or to follow a certain kind of fashion. And, you know, he's looking at images of whether it's athletes or politicians or celebrities or whatever. And he's not like, oh, I should look like Jacob Elordi. You know, he doesn't, it's fine. And I think there's something so liberating about that. But it also makes the conversations about menswear in fashion a little bit interesting and challenging because when we write about them, we have to consider who we're actually talking to.
But I do think it's interesting that you bring on athletes because I think the fact that athletes are now doing their little like walks to court where various courts and they're all wearing like,
yeah,
they're all in fashion.
The tunnel walk has
become a big
thing.
And that's really interesting because I think before men wouldn't be exposed to this capital F fashion unless they purposefully sought it out and they were like, I'm interested to know about fashion. And now what's happening is they're being exposed to it. Like it's meeting them where they are.
Mm-hmm. Travis Kelce was wearing Colleen Estrada the other day walking into court.
I love that.
And I love that.
I think we're going to see it.
But what's interesting is that he's still wearing cargo pants.
Because, you know? Because cargo pants are cool.
Exactly.
They're trending for sure.
Exactly.
Oh, God, God. They've been trending for 4 seasons. Give me it up.
Story anyway, coming soon.
Exactly. Coming soon to Vogue.com. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye. Hey, listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.